human emotion isn't something that technology can break.
Somebody's going after a heart, like, how do you protect?
We're in some serious territory when it comes to these romance scams, and it's a big dollar industry.
All that and more on Security Intelligence. Valentine's Day might be over, but love is in the air. I'm talking, of course, about the love a scammer has for their victim's wallet. Today, we're talking about one of the most pervasive and pernicious forms of social engineering, the romance scam, which cost Americans $672 million in 2024 alone, according to the FBI's Internet Crime Report. And that's just America. Worldwide, we're looking at what is likely a multi-billion dollar industry. And I say industry intentionally, because the scammers behind these schemes are not usually lone con artists. They're complex organizations staffed by tens, hundreds, maybe even thousands of people. So why do romance scams work so well? Why should we as defenders care about them? And what can we do to protect our friends, our family, our businesses, and ourselves from these scams? Joining me to answer those questions and maybe tell me more about their internet boyfriends and girlfriends, Claire Nunez, Creative Director, X-Force Cyber Range, Suja Viswasan, VP Security Products, and Dave Bales, X-Force Incident Command, and host of the Not the Situation Room podcast. Thanks for joining me here today, folks. To start us off, I want to set some context, right? When we say a romance scam, we mean, you know, a scam in which the attacker pretends to have a romantic relationship with their victim. But that obviously can take many, many forms, and they can be very, very sophisticated. So to start, I want to open it up to the panel. When you look at the cyber threat landscape today, what kinds of romance scams are you seeing? What's got you worried? Claire, I'll start with you. What are you seeing out there?
I think there's a lot of those text messages that will come in that are kind of out of context. A lot of, is this Joseph? Nice meeting you the other day. Are we still on for Thursday for coffee? And people naturally are like, I don't know who this is. So in, you know, I'll say in the past world, you would reply and say, who is this? And this person would then initiate a conversation with you. And this is often over text. There's also social media variants and also, you know, the classic catfishing on dating apps and social media in general, too.
Claire covered almost every romance scam there is this year. Thanks
Sorry.
For joining us, everyone.
But that wrong number scam is pretty pervasive now, right? And I mean, I've gotten plenty of those text messages. I'm sure everybody here has probably gotten
yes.
them before. And like Claire said, you know, it preys on this thing where, you know, normally you would respond back and say like, oh, who's this? But that can, I don't know, that can get you into some trouble these days. But before I move on there, Suja, anything to add to what Claire had to say there about the romance scams that you're seeing?
You had earlier mentioned it's going from catfishing to organized crime. Right. Previously, hey, they were going after your heart, right? And this, it was more of, okay, my heart is broken. Now there is a financial thing attached with it because of that intention. It's an industry, like you said. That's why it's complicated.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you're right. It has evolved from just the, you know, the biggest risk before was getting your heart broken, which, you know, look, that stinks,
yes.
but you'll get over that. Now, like you said, the risk is that there's money you can lose, right? And
yes.
maybe potentially much more. Unlike, you know, phishing or click fix, one of the things that the romance scams have going for them that many other social engineering attacks don't have is that they're kind of a long con, right? Like they often unfold over a very long timeline. Sometimes it's called pig butchering, right? Because the scammers take time to fatten up the pig. I know I hate that word too, Suja. It's disgusting.
It's brutal.
I'm wondering how that long con kind of aspect of the scam makes it that much harder to stop or interrupt. And Dave, I'll throw to you here. How do you think that factors into the romance scam success?
Like you said, it's a very slow process. So they're not coming out and asking you for your wallet information right away. They are cultivating a relationship with you that you feel at that point is real. And over the long haul, it just becomes a little bit less apparent to the victim that this is a scam. They think that they're falling in love with someone that they're being catfished by. And they fall victim to this scam that just, in the end, just wipes you out both emotionally and monetarily.
Yeah, and that starts to get at one of the big differences, right, between this kind of scam and like all the other ones you see is that emotional component there, right? Like you said, it's not, you're not just dealing with that monetary loss or that data loss even, but there's an emotional component. And that makes it hard to pull people out of it sometimes, right? Like you can say to people, hey, you're in the middle of a scam, and they don't even necessarily see that, you know? I'm wondering if you, Claire, I want to throw to you for this. I'm wondering if you've kind of seen examples of that sort of thing before where, you know, people, you can confront them with this evidence and they're like, no, I don't agree with you. I don't believe you that it's a scam. And have you seen that kind of thing before?
There's definitely a couple of cases that the FBI has posted about before where people have spent millions thinking that they are sending money either to, you know, their partner, their virtual partner, or they are investing in some kind of crypto scam that their partner has, you know, built that trust and said, you should do this too, because I've had so much success. There is a recent example from 2024 that the FBI was looking into of a CEO who, CEO of a financial firm in Kansas, who actually embezzled, I think like $47.1 million to one of these crypto scams. Unsure if it really started from like a romance perspective, but it's considered one of those ones that started from an unknown number kind of texting you. And he went to prison for embezzlement recently. And that organization had to close its doors. It was acquired by another business because it could no longer operate. He embezzled all of their funds for this, scam. So it's also not something that, you know, if you're a person in power of some kind, it's not something that just impacts you and your funds. It can impact other people's livelihoods too, especially if you have a family, even if you think of it from that perspective and you're not a CEO. It can impact your family, your friends, and, you know, just in general, the people around you and even the scammers, too, which I'm sure you'll get back to later, Matt.
I will. And I think I love that example you just gave us because it touches on like three things that are going to come up here. Right. The first is that like there's a way in which these intensely interpersonal scams can intersect with our organizations. There's also this sense in which, you know, the kinds of people who can be hit by this are not just like, I don't know, gullible folks, right? And I think, you know what, I want to, before I go on, I want to pause right there and talk about that aspect of things. Because when we hear romance scam, we often think about like some gullible, you know, poor sap who is lonely or whatever. You're talking about a CEO here, Claire, right? Suja, from your vantage point, you know, who gets caught up in these kinds of scams? Who do they affect? Who are the targets? What are they like?
I think they look like us. Right. And it can be any day. It's not, you can be gullible on a day when you're really, really busy and then you're just answering something and then it goes into something else that you didn't believe in. So we are from CEOs to an individual who's 79-year-old retiree from Toledo, Ohio, a man who lost about $125,000 of this is life retirement savings. Just because he ended up similarly texting and then you built a relationship with it and then you go from there. So this person has to go, was in the police force. It's not like this person didn't know these things happen. It depends on the day, how you are feeling. We can talk more about it because a lot of things that we say, all privacy and everything, today you can go online and figure out who got divorced recently, right? It's a public record. Even though this is a private matter, it's public record. And when you have AI, when you have organized crime, it's very easy to figure out how to target and then go attack these people. So they're looking like us.
I think that, yeah, first of all, I think you're 100% correct, right? It's people who look just like us. It's anybody. It's all walks of life, right? But it's also, I like how you bring up that social media kind of angle where, like, you can find out this stuff about people, right? And you can even supposedly private stuff, like you said, you can find out who got divorced recently or who got laid off, you know? You find people who are suffering maybe, who are dealing with something difficult, and you latch onto that. And I like what you said, right, about how like it's really hard to kind of protect your heart. You know, you can't put like guardrails around a heart. And that's what makes people so, you know, I don't know, susceptible to these kinds of things. Dave, any thoughts on your end in terms of like who gets targeted, how they get targeted, what the scam kind of looks for in a victim. What's your take there?
Well, I was going to bring up the recent breach of Match.com, Bumble, all of the dating sites that have been hit. And so they go in and they get all the information that they can, then they create profiles. They don't go in there and overtly use the information. They go in and create profiles that target the lonely people of the world. Those that have been divorced, like Suja said, divorced, looking for something to fulfill their life. They are just using all this information, not for monetary gain in the beginning. They're building trust. So these breaches is another easy way to get information that will allow them to tailor their attack on these people. And I laughed when Suja was talking about the old man, and it was only because she said Toledo, Ohio. I don't know why that was funny, but she picked Toledo out of nowhere.
Toledo is a funny, it's a funny word, it's a funny city, I get it. But no, I think that's another good point too, is the way that like these big data breaches can turn into these kind, like fodder for these kinds of scams. And you basically have these industrialized operations, like we said, pulling information from all over the place.
And this just happened 3 weeks ago. This was a new breach. So
yes,
we're going to hear in the coming weeks, a lot of scams started right around this time frame, right around Valentine's Day.
Now is a good time to kind of transition over to talking about the scale of these operations, right? Like, who are the people behind these scams? Who's actually pulling this stuff off? Claire, let's go to you, because you started to touch on this, I think, a little bit before. We're not talking about lone scammers here. Who are we talking about? Who's behind this kind of thing?
Yeah, so these are really big organized crime groups, not just cyber crime groups. They are, you know, pulling in people that they have trafficked into these major crime centers. People are not allowed to leave, and they are essentially forced to sit for 17 hours a day texting you. So these people who are in Southeast Asia mostly are texting you saying, "Hi, Carol. It was so great to see you," and hopes that you reply, "I'm not Carol." So they are these people who are actually forced and trapped and tortured in these centers. I'm sure we'll get to it at the end in terms of what not to do. But in short, do not text back, because you are encouraging that, human trafficking and having people in these centers. But yeah, they are people who were lured into IT jobs in a different country, and then they get there, and the IT job is not non-existent, and they sit there, and their job is to research people and, you know, text these numbers. So really big criminal operations there.
Yeah, and for our listeners who want to maybe know more about that, there was an amazing article in the MIT Technology Review last year by Peter Guest and Emily Fishbein. Highly recommend going to read that, because they do. They talk about how a lot of the people doing these scams have themselves been kind of scammed into taking on these quote-unquote jobs in these compounds. And so they operate as like a almost professionalized kind of thing, where you have like a layer of management who are overseeing these people who they've kind of often forced into it. But I'm wondering, how did we get to a point where it became so professionalized? How are they able to do this sort of thing? Do you have any thoughts, Dave, on how this has kind of developed, how it's become something that's no longer just catfishing, like Suja said? It's become this big, massive, multi-international kind of thing. Any thoughts there?
LinkedIn has become so popular for recruiters to reach out to people during all of the layoffs that have gone on over the past year, 2 years, and they're sending people are sending resumes out like crazy, so they don't even remember who they sent them to. Well, they get a LinkedIn message that says, "Hey, like Claire said, would you like to come work in IT security? We'll pay you $300,000 a year to live in Chicago." And they answer these ads, and like she said, they're going to these places that the job itself doesn't exist.
Absolutely. And yeah, I think it's important that you point out, right, that it's like, it's not that the social media sites like LinkedIn or Facebook or whatever are necessarily at fault here, but it's that technology enables this kind of thing to happen, right? It's people misusing the platform. And this comes up all the time when we talk about things. You know, any tool can be used for good or ill, right? And so this isn't a situation where it's like social media sites necessarily lead to scamming. It's a situation where these platforms can be used for a negative case such as this. Suja, I want to bring you in here, get your take on the kind of professionalization and maybe how it complicates our job as defenders dealing with this stuff. How do you feel about it?
Because of the money involved, especially on the romance scam, people are not that open about talking about it as well. So a lot of people don't want to say that they have lost this money. Very few people actually take action for that. So for the organized criminal organization, it becomes much easier. It's a lucrative business, right? They can keep going and dipping on this because it's very difficult to catch. One of the thing is that if you don't report it within minutes, it's very difficult to get the money back or even catch these people on how this is being played. So it's extremely important for us to bring that awareness to people. And I wouldn't even say it's a victim. It's like when something like this happens, how do we remove the shame from people so we can act? Once they see that, hey, there is not money, then it will also go away. But romance scam are very complicated because it's also your ego, your emotion, everything in play. So by the time people go and complain or even talk to somebody, even within their own family, it's too late.
Yeah, and I'm glad you bring up the idea that, like, you know, it's really hard to take any action once it happens, right? Like, it's so easy to get the money is basically, it's almost lost as soon as it's sent, right? And that's partially because it gets sent across, you know, international lines a lot of times. But also, as Claire was referencing earlier, and this was one of the things I was going to mention before I started talking about, you know, other things, is the cryptocurrency scam aspect of this, right? Which is like so often the way the scam plays out is you meet the person or you start talking to the person, they develop this relationship with you, and then they say, oh, by the way, I have an investment opportunity for you. And it involves Bitcoin, it involves cryptocurrency. And that stuff's untraceable, right? And so you put your money into it and then there's no way to get it back. So, you know, if you ever meet somebody online with an investment opportunity, they don't have one. This is just a PSA. There's no such thing. But let's also talk about the role of AI here and how that is starting to influence how romance scams, other scams too, but especially romance scams, are carried out. Dave, I want to throw it to you again for this one. Have you seen or heard about AI tools starting to influence how romance scams are carried out, how they're targeted? How's this working?
It used to be that you could pinpoint whether something was a scam by the use of the language of the country that you're in or whatever language you speak. AI development has made that almost impossible now because you could throw things into Google Translate and get a rough translation, but you can take whatever you want to say and put it into ChatGPT, for example, and get a natural language response. So it's not very easy to pinpoint where these scams are coming from, whether or not they're real, whether they're fake. AI development is helpful in so many ways. It's helpful in so many ways, but it's also a really, really big, bad thing.
And I'm also thinking about the sort of the deepfake angle here and how AI kind of enables that. Claire, I want to throw it to you. Any thoughts on how deepfakes play into the romance scam economy?
Yeah, so, I mean, naturally, if you're dating someone on the internet, you probably want to see their face. I don't know if you necessarily want to have just a texting relationship. Maybe some people do. But if you video chat with someone, you want to be able to see who it is. So deepfakes make it easier for you to pose as someone you're not, both visually and from an audio perspective. So that is kind of not really a barrier as much anymore for, you know, even catfishing in general. So yeah, deepfakes just make it easier to make it believable. Which, I mean, unsolicited dating advice, if you're talking to someone on the internet and they don't want to meet you in person at any point, you might not want to pursue that. but especially in this case too, like it could be just fraud in general.
Dave talked about the procreating profile of people, right? That has become very easy with AI because you can go LinkedIn profile, you can go to county records to figure out if they bought a house or foreclosed a house or if they got married or somebody died in their family, divorce. You can create a profile of a person much more easily than you can figure out how do you target them, right? That has become easy. Multiple months of research or weeks of research now became much easier for AI to come and tell, okay, these are the top 10 that you can or 50 that we can go after because they are at this state in their life. So that's exactly like Dave said, you can use it for good, just like any other tool, and it is as easily available for the bad people.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, right? It's not just being used in the execution. It's even in that planning stage, right? It's like you said, it's in that strategy stage. Now the research is automated. So like you automate the research, you write a phishing email that you can't even tell. You set up a deep fake. You know, we've even heard about like people using it to pretend to be like celebrities. You know, I've heard stories about, you know, people posing as Brad Pitt or Elon Musk, like real people, but you can get a deepfake going and it convinces people. You know, before we pivot to kind of talking about what do you do about all of this, I want to open it up for another kind of round the horn question here, specifically around misconceptions, because, and we've touched on a little bit of it already, but I do think one of the reasons I wanted to have an episode all about romance scams is not just because it's, you know, Valentine's Day and it fits the theme, but it's also a kind of scam that I think there's a lot of misconceptions about out there. And I want to make sure we address them before we move on. So I'll go around, start with you, Dave. What kinds of misconceptions do you think people, your average person has about romance scams that maybe make them a little more vulnerable to those scams?
That only stupid people fall for them. That's number one. It's a little on the nose. And that's not the case at all. Stupid people is such a derogatory term, but anyone can fall victim to this. It's not targeted at lesser intelligent people. It's not targeted at smart people. It's targeted at anyone that they can get their informational hands on.
Yeah, I like that. Because again, it's an emotional thing, right? It's not an intellectual thing. And I do think the thought that it's an intellectual thing can sometimes stop people from admitting that they're caught up in something. There can be a stigma almost, right? Because you don't want to feel less than. Claire, your thoughts, any misconceptions you feel like you need to clear up here?
That it's not just older people. It's not just people who are senior citizens or middle-aged. Young people also fall for these in different capacities. Younger people are more likely to fall for like sugar baby scams or something like that, or, you know, someone who's posing as a celebrity, then, you know, the context is different depending on the age. And through better research that these criminals can do now, it makes it easier to target those scams towards you. But yeah, everybody's a target. It doesn't matter if you are a teen or if you are in your 90s. Everybody is a target if you have a phone.
Pivoting for a moment here, we've been talking so much about how these scams affect individuals, and they're often targeted at individuals. But Claire kind of foreshadowed this turn I want to take here when we were talking about the CEO in Kansas, I think you said, right? Because the scams target individuals, but they can become organizational issues, right? And I'm thinking specifically of a story of a CFO of the Thailand branch of a multinational eyewear company. I'm not going to name names here, but she fell for a romance scam. And the Australian Broadcasting Corporation reported on how, you know, a scammer posing as a U.S. Army doctor talked this CFO into stealing money from her company in order to send it to him. And over the course of 3 months, she used fake invoices and false accounting entries to make 251 transfers to 112 bank accounts in 17 countries to the tune of $250 million, right? So this is a massive, massive, defrauding her company because this person convinced her to. And I think it talks to both how anybody can be a target. You know, we're talking about a CFO. This is an executive leader. This is a savvy person who knows finance. And even they could get, you know, they can get hit by this. And it also goes to how this is an organizational issue. But it targets like an employee in a personal capacity. I feel like there's some kind of tension there, right? Between like it's a personal scam, but it hits the organization. Dave, do you think that romance scams are more tricky to deal with than other social engineering scams when it comes to our protecting our organizations? Are they more complex or is it the same old, same old? What's your take?
I think it's probably the same. There's going to be the emotional aspect, and we've kind of beat that one up as much as we can. But it's still the same targeting of a specific individual, spear phishing, for example. You're still targeting someone high enough up that can do enough damage or get you enough money that will damage your company and its reputation for years and years to come. If not, like Claire said, completely eradicate the business itself.
Absolutely. So Suja, given that, where do you think an organization starts when it comes to, you know what, we're aware of romance scams. We know this is a thing we want to make sure we warn our employees against, we protect ourselves against. How do you start thinking about defenses against this in an organizational context? Any thoughts there?
It's a tough one, man. It's a very tough one. Because if you're talking about general phishing scam from an enterprise, it's much easier, right? It's a transaction. You pay me, I'm supposed to do certain things. I'm not supposed to do things. It's very transactional and it works. When somebody comes after your heart, it's very difficult to delineate. And so I think it's a much more awareness. Not just talking about, hey, these are work devices. We talk about, hey, not using it, because we take it very, very lightly, those things. What is doable and what is not? One thing is awareness. The other one that companies need to do is reduce the barrier of shame, because like Dave said, it's not stupid. Anybody can get what is next. I think we are many people who go into this sunk cost fallacy that if I do more, maybe I can get it back and get it back. It's like gambling, right? Oh, I lost it. If I put some more, it's human tendency to figure out how do I get out without realizing you are digging bigger hole.
Yeah, I think the sunk cost fallacy angle is a good one to bring up, because you're right. I think that happens in a lot of these scams. We see it, especially when they take an investment scam kind of form, because often what the romance scammer is saying is, oh, you put some money in, but if you want to get even more out, you got to put more in, right? And then you think, well, I already went this far, I got to keep going. So education, you know, is a huge aspect of this. Claire, as somebody who works in kind of training a lot of times, do you think education for romance scams has to be any different than our standard social engineering education, or what's your take there?
I think the biggest thing is we do have to talk about it, and we don't always talk about romance scams when we do these kinds of sessions, especially for kind of high profile people, where it's like, if your name is out there, people are going to know things about you. You do have to have a little bit of more skepticism as you're getting random text messages or random emails, or even if, you know, like an investment opportunity. And one of the big things, too, with these scammers is that they have these crypto apps that look very legitimate unless you take a very deep look at them. But some of them even have like reviews on the app store. So you do have to kind of look at things, especially if you're going to be putting a significant sum of money in there. You have to look at things very critically and see if they have proper backing and that kind of thing, not just user generated, reviews. But I think we need to talk about it a lot more. And I think people don't want to, especially because Suja mentioned like people get embarrassed. People don't want to talk about themselves being impacted, and others don't, they don't think it's as risky because it doesn't impact people. But we think that because not as many people will talk about.
And it's important to lift that stigma. And the only way you do that is by talking about it, right? And one of the things I went into this episode wrestling with was this is, we've said it so many times, but this is an emotional scam. But cybersecurity pros, like, what do you do about emotion? You can't like throw a firewall on an emotion, but you can at least talk about this kind of thing, right? Like you can at least make it, just part of the normal discourse, part of the normal training, so that people maybe feel a little less embarrassed if they find themselves kind of caught up in something like this. But on the flip side, maybe there are some technological things we can do, some technical controls. Dave, any thoughts there? Like, is there anything technology can do to help with this? Or is it really just an educational problem?
I can't think of a technological way to get to someone's heart. Verified caller ID is about as far as I can go with that, because human emotion isn't something that technology can break. Other human emotion that has the ability to break through human emotion. Technology, I don't think it's going to help.
Given the amount of financial impact that this is having, I do believe that we need to have proper controls and fraud detection placed in our financial institutions, especially when it comes to crypto, because they're not tracked. They are not regulated. It becomes very difficult to track them. So we do need to figure out what we can do there. Like Dave said, for the heart does whatever it wants to do. But at least can we put controls on before I go and can I detect some anomalous transaction and then put a pause there for people to think before they do things? What are the things that we can do? It becomes a serious thing because it's not a one-off thing. You talked about what billions of dollars that is going on this industry. It's time that we think about, for the financial institutions, what we can do there.
Yeah, we've moved past the gift card era. We're into the bank accounts and the Bitcoin era now. They're not asking for you know, gift cards to send overseas anymore. It's real now. It's bank accounts. I know my bank puts fraud protection on any rapid transactions. You know, if I go in one day and I take $5,000 out, and then I go in the next day and take $5,000 out, they're like, no. We're in some serious territory when it comes to these romance scams, and it's a big dollar industry.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good point that we might not be able to place technology or technological controls in a place that stops the scam from happening, but you can at least put it in a place where it maybe disrupts some of those big major money movements, right? And like mitigate some of that harm. But, you know, we've talked a bit about protecting the organization, what you can do, the education and the technological controls you can put in place. But it's also, again, it's a fundamentally human scam. And so I'm wondering for, you know, on a human level, those of us who, I don't know, maybe we suspect a friend or a loved one is dealing with a scam like this, or we want to educate ourselves so that if it happens, we can help. What do you think? And as we've said, it can be hard to pull people out of this scam in particular. So how do you think, do you have any advice for how our listeners, if they suspect a friend or a loved one is dealing with something like this, how do they respond? What's the best way, or maybe just the least wrong way to respond? Claire, any thoughts there?
It's almost like this person, they're addicted to the validation from these, you know, this interaction, this relationship. So I feel like you do have to kind of broach it with some sensitivity, but at the same time, you want to be firm about, like, do you know where this money is going? Is your investment actually secure, kind of thing? But it is very hard. There are examples of people who have just like alienated their entire families because they are in love with this person. So it's delicate, but you do have to remind them, like, you've never met this person. Like, it's hard though. It's like, I'm not somebody who's equipped to fully say, you know, this is how you broach it. But, you know, you have to state the facts to an extent.
Yeah, I don't think any of us are fully equipped. I don't think anybody is in the entire world. You know what I mean? I feel like the reason this is a scam that persists is because no one really quite knows how to stop it. Maybe there isn't a way to fully stop it. Asuja, do you have anything to add, though? It seemed like you had some thoughts here.
See, many times we come to know about this ruin, economic ruin, after the fact, right? Somebody has already, it comes after the fact. So I'm just trying to figure out, how do we get to a place where we are all talking to each other and then able to at least discuss with our family enough, our friends, and then get there? Because a lot of time we end up doing what our family, friends, or we're just fools. Like one of those three F's, right? Like why we invest, why we go and give it to charity. Many of this is guided by that. So in those moments where we are misguided, do we have a place to go have this conversation? But beyond that, it's very, very difficult.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a social crisis in a lot of ways that cybersecurity pros also have to deal with. And like, that's tough, you know? Dave, any thoughts on your end about what you do on that kind of interpersonal level?
Yeah, go in researched. If you need to confront a loved one that you think may be involved in this kind of scam, bring some research with you. It's a lot easier for them to handle you coming to them with, hey, this might be a scam, if you've got some research to back up what you're saying. Hey, this type of scam has been going on forever. These are the numbers that we have. It happens in this particular way. Is that what happened to you? But also be prepared. If you're going to do that, you may, like Claire said, you may alienate that family member. So you have to weigh that out. I mean, if it's your mom, do you really want to go to your mom and tell her that the man that she, quote, loves isn't who she thinks it is? Because she may say, well, you know what? I really don't care what you say.
Yeah, it's, you know, I don't want to end the episode on a kind of bummer note, but it's a tough problem. It's a tough problem, you know, and again, nobody really has the full answer, but I do like this concept that's come up over and over as we've talked, which is that, like, the first step is just making sure that this is part of the discourse, right? Like, we're talking about it in our training, we're talking about it in our organizations with other people, just keeping it up there so that people know that it's a thing that can happen, and two, that you're not alone if you find yourself in there, you know, maybe reducing some of that stigma can help. Before we close it out, though, what's the one thing you want listeners to kind of remember about romance games as they walk away from this, right? If you could distill our whole conversation here today down to, like, the one takeaway you think people should have, what would that be? Claire, I'll start with you. What do you think is the key takeaway here?
Don't answer, even if you think it's funny and you have a really quippy response. It's driving engagement for them. So don't answer these texts and then keep talking about it. That was kind of two. So apologies.
That's okay. No, and I do honestly, I think I'm so glad you brought that up at the end here, because not just, you know, is it driving engagement if you answer, but also a lot of people kind of fancy themselves amateur, like, scam busters. And, like, these are professionalized operations, as we've said. They might be able to run circles around you. You know what I mean? So, like, don't think you're going to get in there and you're going to, you know, scam the scammer. Most of us do not have those skills.
It's like talking to a stand-up comedian. Like, you cannot win.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I feel like that's a really nice under-the-wire warning to get in there. Suja, for you, what's the one takeaway you kind of want listeners to have about romance scams here?
See, it's very similar. Remember what your parents taught you. Don't talk to strangers, okay? Just because they are in your phone, in your space, doesn't mean they are your friends. They're still strangers. If you don't know the number, they are strangers.
Yeah, no, you know, I grew up, stranger danger was a thing. I feel like we lost that, you know? Dave, for you, what's the takeaway that you want listeners walking away with?
If you did fall for one of these scams, you are just as smart as the smartest person. We've all fallen for some form of scam in our lifetime. It doesn't mean that you are less than. It just happens, folks. I mean, take some solace in knowing that you're not the only person this has happened to. Talk about your story and know that you're not alone.
Absolutely. I love that. So I'm glad that we got to end on an uplifting note instead of a bummer note. And Dave, of all people, is the one uplifting us here.
Very romantic of you, Dave.
It's so romantic. I know. That's all the time we have for today, folks. Thank you so much to Claire and Suja and Dave for being here. Thank you to the viewers and the listeners. As always, subscribe to Security Intelligence wherever podcasts are found. And as Claire said, just don't respond. Don't respond. And as Suja said, don't talk to strangers.